was the person who taught me how to ride all the streetcars and L's around the city of Chicago so I could experience the rich cultural heritage of that wonderful city all on my own, and I'll never forget her for that. And I'll never forget another woman either. This afternoon, my wife and I are going to take part in a memorial service for a woman that we met and stayed with while I was a minister on loan to the UU Fellowship in Ames, Iowa. It was the second UU Fellowship ever formed in 1948, and it had gone all those years without ever having a minister. But believe it or not, my task wasn't to get them used to a minister. It was to show them what they could do with their brand new place now they'd finally built a building and didn't know how to populate it. It was a great experience, and I'll never forget how welcoming Denny was to Jan and I for the 6 weeks we spent with her family out there on the plains and cornfields of Iowa. Thinking about Denny got me to thinking about a lot of other people in my life who've now passed on, and thinking about what it is about these people that I remember and why. And what it is that people may remember about me when it's my turn to go. As a minister, I go through a similar exercise with people every time I'm asked to do a memorial service like this one I'm going to be doing in Folsom this afternoon. After the folks who've gathered to talk with me have gotten through the list of a person's achievements, the kinds of things that you might put on a plaque, you know, so-and-so was the foreman at the factory or the president of the PTA. I try to get them to tell me stories. Stories that will tell me something about what this person was really like in their interactions with them. A eulogy, you see, isn't like the resume that could go on a plaque. It's much more about who we are and what we've meant to those who we relate to in our lives. And the person who got me thinking about this was Arianna Huffington, who I used to think of as a prize A flake, until she invented this thing called Huffington Post, which I read every day on the internet. Arianna Huffington is actually a pretty wise woman. And in a recent article that she wrote and posted on the Huffington Post, she had some things to say about people's lives and the way they live them and why creating a eulogy that we'd like to have spoken about us was much more important than building a resume. And that's worth thinking about because, as Arianna Huffington puts it, no matter how much a person spends his or her life burning the candle at both ends and doing all these things we feel we need to do to somehow get some recognition for ourselves, there is a kind of toxicity to success. Because often it means that we're spending so much time on trying to get people to, you know, recognize us as the president of a PTA, someone with that kind of status, rather than thinking we're just a really good person. The kind of person who goes around making people laugh or just smiling at them. How seldom is it that when we're walking along the street, for instance, does someone just smile? It could be us who does the smiling. David Brooks, the guy we listen to on PBS on Fridays a lot, said, "Describe a person's care, wisdom, truthfulness, and courage, and you're describing what really matters about them. Describe all those little things, the little moral judgments, the little acts of kindness that emanate from that inner region that is our true self, and you're getting at the essence of a person. From my experience dealing with families who've lost a loved one, such as this family for whom I'll be doing a memorial service this afternoon, the things that one might put on a resume, although they're important, really don't matter anywhere near as much to them when they're thinking about this person with whom they've been close than the kind of person that one who's just passed on really is. I remember getting caught up in the sweep of a just horrible memorial service once. It was for a vice president of Playboy magazine, an Asian woman who had been killed in a horrible crash of a DC-10 at O'Hare Airport in Chicago. And I went and met with her family, and this was just a wonderful woman in terms of her relationship to her family. But believe me, when Playboy got hold of that memorial service, that wonderful woman just disappeared. And that's a shame, because they were not honoring who she really was. And an example of what I mean came from Mona Simpson, who was the sister of Steve Jobs. And you know, Steve fought with cancer, but he finally died. And when she gave her eulogy for her brother, she didn't say a single word about Apple. To her, her brother wasn't the guy who invented all those things that come after that small case I. He was a brother and a husband and a father who knew the true value of what technology can so often distract us from. To Jobs' sister, even though her brother's company had created iconic products, what lived on in her mind was the kind of person her brother was when he was with her and when he was with his family. The famous die, just like everyone else does. There's no escaping it. And when they do, it's how they related to others that really matters. People can be looked up to in the public realm for their achievements and be absolutely horrible people when it comes down to who they really were, just as the opposite can be true. And when Mona Simpson talked about her brother, she said what really moved her about him, along with his work ethic, was just how passionate he was and how deeply he loved. She said he believed that love happened all the time, everywhere, which is why he was never ironic, never cynical, never pessimistic. To Mona, Steve was humble. Steve liked to keep learning. Steve cultivated whimsy. With his children and his wife and all the rest of us, Steve had a lot of fun because he treasured happiness. And I think a eulogy like this says a lot about what really matters in life. Steve Jobs would never have been satisfied if he hadn't created something like the Apple computer with his colleagues and then gone on to work on all those other Apple products with which we're surrounded. But if that was all that mattered to him, his sister would never have been able to say what she said about him. The same is true for my favorite poet, E.E. Cummings. Suppose that shows my age, that he's my favorite. When Cummings reflected on the death of his father, it really struck me. It wasn't the big things that mattered to this Unitarian minister father of his. Cummings says of his father, he was a New Hampshire man, 6'2", a crack shot and famous fly fisherman and first-rate sailor and woodsman who could find his way through the forest primeval without a compass and a canoeist who'd still paddle you up to a deer without ruffling the surface of a pond. Cummings goes on to say that his father, one beautiful Sunday in spring, remarked from his pulpit that he couldn't understand why anyone had come to hear him on such a beautiful day. And he horribly shocked his pew holders by crying, "The kingdom of heaven isn't a spiritual roof garden, my friends. It's inside you." I don't know whether his pew holders then got up and left or not. But he certainly invited him to. And then there was Cummings' mother. And he remembers her with equal affection. She said, she grew up a shy, or as we now say, neurotic girl, who had to be plucked from under the sofa whenever company came to call. But he found this almost unbelievable, because he says of his mother, she could no more have told a lie than flown over a housetop, but my mom, she seemed so shy. But never have I encountered anyone more joyous, anyone healthier in body and mind, anyone quite so incapable of remembering a wrong, or anyone so completely and humanly and unaffectedly generous. And whereas my father had created his Unitarianism, his own father being a Christian of some hellfire sort, she inherited hers. It was an integral part of herself, and she expressed it as she breathed and as she smiled. The two indispensable factors in life my mother always maintained were health and a sense of humor. And although her health eventually failed her, she kept her sense of humor to the very beginning. One of the ironies of this smartphone era into which Apple has brought us is that that little rectangle in our pocket can actually lead us away from a life that's worth eulogizing just as easily as does spending all of our time trying to build some kind of flashy resume. Constant chatter, connecting without meaning, filling our lives with images we can't touch or affect what we have going on. Oh, that's so silly. Now, I don't mean that you should get rid of your smartphone, but, you know, I used to ride BART into San Francisco from Walnut Creek every day and just watch what people were doing with those little rectangles from their pocket, playing solitaire. Just think of the memories Cummings has of his mother because of the way she lived and the way she interacted with her own children. Of his mother, he writes this after there had been a terrible accident. He says, "It isn't often you meet a true heroine, and I have the honor to be a true heroine's son. My father and mother were coming up from Cambridge to New Hampshire one day in their newly purchased automobile, an air-cooled Franklin with an ash frame. And as they neared the Ossipee, snow fell. My mother was driving, and left to herself, she would never have paused for such a trifle as snow. But as the snow increased, my father made her stop while he got out and wiped the windshield. They didn't have fancy windshield wipers in those days. And then he got in, and she drove on. And some minutes later, a locomotive cut the car in half, killing my father instantly. And when two brakemen jumped from the halting train, they saw a woman standing, dazed but erect, they said, beside the mangled machine with blood spouting, as the older man said to me, out of her head. And one of her hands, the younger added, kept feeling of her dress as if trying to discover why it was so wet. These men took my 66-year-old mother by the arms and tried to lead her to a Newbury farmhouse, but she threw him off. She strode straight to my father's body and directed a group of scared spectators to cover him. And when this was done, and only then would she let them take her away." And then later, when Cummings and his sister were called to come up to be by their mother's bedside, they find her alive, why the head doctor couldn't imagine. All she wanted to do was just join her husband at that moment. But when Cummings and his sister spoke to her, their mother recognized their voices, and she began to understand what her death would mean to them. So gradually, a miracle happened, and she decided to live. Eulogies like this show that the way we live is much more important than our accomplishments. As significant as they may be, and as justifiably proud of them we may be ourselves. Thinking about what goes on in a life that's worth remembering, my newfound sage, Arianna Huffington, says, "Since Einstein, scientists have been trying to come up with a theory of everything, which would explain our entire physical world by reconciling general relativity with quantum physics. And the study of our emotional world, we find there's no analogous theory of everything. But if there were, empathy and giving would be right at the center of it. And modern science has overwhelmingly confirmed the wisdom of those early philosophers and religious thinkers who said that what mattered most was empathy, compassion, and giving. They're the building blocks of our being, of what it truly means to be a religious person. So, what do we want said about us when our time comes, and all that's left of us is what people can remember? George Carlin once joked, "I've always been relieved when someone is delivering a eulogy and I realize that I'm listening to it." Meaning he's still alive. And it's when we're still alive that we're creating the memories that people are going to have of us. So what's it going to be? Are the memories going to be of a loving, respectful, thankful, happy, and enlivened person, or the other way around, of someone sad and regretful? There's a Seattle woman named Jane Lauder who had the gumption to write a eulogy for herself as she was in the last 2 or 3 weeks of her life. And she said, "One of the few advantages of knowing that you only got that short a time to live is it can force you to think about the way you want to be remembered." And in thinking about what mattered most to her, Lauder said it was the relationship she had with her husband and her children, along with her other family and her friends. As it turned out, it was the love she shared with those around her that meant the most, not only to her, but to all these people around her. And it's what brought smiles to their faces when they heard her eulogy being given. The love Lauder felt for the people around her, the love felt by Steve Jobs and Cummings' mother, are expressions of something that's deep inside all of us. Something that's in there that wants to come out, and we owe it a chance to do that. A couple of years ago on Fresh Air, Terry Gross interviewed the historian Tony Jutt, who was dying of Lou Gehrig's disease, which you know is a terrible, debilitating disease where you just literally sort of slip away and not able to control your body any longer. And Gross asked Jutt about his beliefs, about what he believed that kept him going as he saw his life slipping away like that. And he said, "Well, I have to confess to you that I don't believe in an afterlife. I don't believe in a single or multiple God. I respect people who do, but I just can't bring myself to believe in it." "But there's a big but," he said, "that enters in here. I am much more conscious than I ever was, for obvious reasons, of when it's what it's going to mean to the people left behind once I'm dead. It won't mean anything for me, but it will mean a lot to them. And it's important that I give something of myself to them, even in these last moments of my life, even if it's just to be able to die graciously. He says, in one curious way, I've come to believe in an afterlife as a place where I still have responsibilities, just like I have in this life. Except, I can only exercise them before I get there. Interesting. Before I get there. Once I get there, it's too late. So no God, no organized religion, but a developing sense that there's something bigger than the world we live in, including after we die, and that we have a responsibility in that and in this world. So, says Huffington, whether or not we believe in an afterlife, by being fully present in our lives now and fully present in the lives of those we care about, we are creating our own afterlife and we're writing our own eulogy. The day is going to come when we're gone. No one escapes, no matter who we are. So it's worth thinking about how people are going to remember us. And I think about that a lot as I enter into the last chapter of my life, thinking, you know, the first time I came here to Sacramento was 50 years ago. I can't change what's gone on in my life, what's gone before. I can try to make right some things that I've done that were wrong, but I can't undo them. What I can do is move on with my life right now and care about the people in it. I've got a pretty good resume, a long one. But what I want to be remembered for isn't all those things under the bullet points. I want to be remembered for being a good person. I want those who remember me to be able to say that on balance, I've had a good life and have added something to the lives of my wife and my family and the people around me. And I hope what's remembered of me won't just be things from some distant past. I think of Cummings' mother and the example she was to her son and her daughter as lying there in her bed, covered with that blood she felt of on her dress, she decided her children needed her and that she needed them. It was having people in his life like this that led Cummings to say, and then put it in writing, what I think is the loveliest of his poems. I thank you, God, for most this amazing day, for the leaping greenly spirits of trees and a blue true dream of sky, and for everything which is natural, which is infinite, which is yes. I who have died am alive again today, and this is the sun's birthday. This is the birthday of life and love and wings and of the gay, great, happening, illimitably earth. Wow. Amen to that.